is from 16 to 24.
Right.
So Burjan originally called it, well, not originally, but in his book he wrote, Understanding Karma on the Platform of Jnana. In other words, the philosophy of Karma Yoga. And in the workbook, it says just Karma Yoga. And it mentioned that after explaining his transcendental position, Krishna analyzes action and describes how to perform activities on the transcendental plane. So it's like analyzing Karma Yoga or the philosophy of Nishkama Karma Yoga. Because that's what it means, understanding karma on the platform of jnana. I mean, understanding karma by jnana, by using analysis. That's what he meant to say. Okay, let's finish the last. The fourth section is 25 to 33. What was here? That's where there was a list of all the different yagyas. Right? What did you call that?
Different sacrifices of use to jnana.
Okay. You? Same? Yeah. Same?
Sacrifices are must.
Sacrifices?
Is a must.
Is a must. And Sri Keshav Prabhu?
Different sacrifices.
Different sacrifices. Yes.
Repentance with jnana.
Sacrifices with jnana.
Different sacrifices, results and comparisons.
Results and comparisons. Right. That's good. That's the best one we've heard so far. Okay, so Burijan Prabhu called it sacrifices lead to transcendental knowledge. And that's in the workbook also. Sacrifices lead to transcendental knowledge. Or they should lead. Maybe we could add a word. Sacrifices should lead to transcendental knowledge. Okay. Last section we're going to do now, but you should have already looked at it. That's from 34 onwards. What did you call that? Burijan originally called it conclusion. But that's not good enough. We need something more. What would you say?
Result of cultivating transcendental.
Result of cultivating transcendental knowledge.
Glories of transcendental knowledge.
Glories of transcendental knowledge.
Removing doubts and its result.
Removing doubts and
its result.
And its the results of doubts. Okay. Someone else? Bhaktaliyo. Transcendental knowledge. Okay. What do you call it?
Transcendental knowledge, glories and qualifications required.
Glories and qualification. That's more accurate, actually. Samarupa is very accurate. It's good. Keshavji.
Acquiring transcendental.
Acquiring. Okay. So, in the workbook it says summary of transcendental knowledge. Summary. And it mentions, having explained that all sacrifices lead to transcendental knowledge, Krishna now describes aspects of transcendental knowledge. To attain transcendental knowledge, one must control the senses and submissively approach a spiritual master to render faithful service to him. Thus one will become free from sinful reactions and understand knowledge of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. Krishna urges Arjuna to arm himself with transcendental knowledge and fight. Okay, so we'll do that section now. With the famous verse beginning with the Tad Vidhi Paripalatena. Fourth chapter. 34. Tanvidi pranipatina pariprashnina semaya Upadekshanti Jnanam Jnaninas Tattva Darshanah. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth and turned down. So, after giving the whole list of transcendental knowledge and then saying that, a whole list of sacrifices, and then saying that they're all approved in the Vedas, and that they are all to culminate in transcendental knowledge, then one might ask, how can this transcendental knowledge be attained? Or how can one perform these sacrifices in the proper way? How can someone get more information about how to perform the different sacrifices? So Krishna mentions that one must approach the jnani or tattva-darshana. Now the jnani is the person who knows the Shabda Brahma or the scriptures, and tattva-darshana means one who has seen the Lord or has experience of him to one degree or another. Certainly there must be various levels of tattva-darshana. So, tadvidhi pranipatina. So, learn this truth by approaching the spiritual master. And after offering him dandavat pranams, one should ask two questions. You perform your dandavat pranams, then you ask two questions. Why am I in this material condition? And how can I become free from this material condition? So, Rupa Goswami has read Adau Guru Padashraya, that in the beginning one must approach the lotus feet of the spiritual master. It's the first anga of the 64 angas of bhakti given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, and the first five items are actually about inquiring from him, taking instruction from him, like this. Following the footsteps of the previous gurus and sadhus, like this. So, and these are the first 20 preliminary items, right? Means the first 10 are do's and the second 10 are don'ts. So of the first 10 that are do's, 5 of them have to do with approaching the guru, serving him, inquiring from him, taking initiation from him, following the sadhus, like this. Therefore, we can say that the Pancharatras, they expound further on the Shrutis. So this is a Shruti text, and Krishna is giving just a sutra, Tadvidhi Pranipatina, and you approach the Tadvidarshana. And you do Pranipat, Pranam, and Sevaya and Parishprasna, you ask questions, relevant questions about Atma Tattva, not where can I get some good price on rice or whatever, some mundane questions. Where can I get the best kinds of dhotis? Right. So in the beginning of the Mahabharata, in the Adi Parva, it's Vedavyas tells the story of Ayodhya Gomya and his three disciples, Aruni, Veda, and Upamanyu. Aruni was the one who lay down in the water to stop the fields from flooding. And then when he didn't come back to the ashram for prasadam in the evening, then Ayodhadhamya and his other disciples went out to find Aruni, and when they found him in the water, laying there in the mud, then, you know, the guru was saying, why are you laying here? He said, well, there was the only way to stop the fields from flooding, because there was nothing else to put here, so I just lay down. And the guru was so impressed by the sacrifice and the sincerity of the disciple that he blessed Aruni with transcendental knowledge. And he later became a spiritual master himself. And then Veda, he was requested by the guru to serve him in his home and perform menial tasks like bringing water, lighting the fire, cleaning and so forth, serving him prasadam. And sometimes the guru didn't call him for prasadam, so he would fast. It seems that he did that quite often, not calling him. I mean, he fasted a lot. And he slept on the floor without any bedding. So sometimes he was cold, and sometimes he was hungry like this. So he went through great austerity serving the spiritual master. And the guru was so pleased with him that he blessed him also with transcendental knowledge, and he also became later a spiritual master. Then Upamanyu, he was a little bit more kind of stubborn and a little foolish, and it's a humorous story. Upamanyu was his seva was in the Goshala, so he came to meet the guru sometimes. And he was very fat also. So the spiritual master asked him, how do you maintain yourself? And he said that, well, I go out and beg. And with that money, I eat nicely, as you can see. He was very fat. So he said, what? He said, you're going out and begging and for yourself? So the disciple is supposed to beg for the guru. You're supposed to give that to me. You can't just go out and beg money for yourself. This is bogus. Who told you to do such a thing? He said, I don't know. He said, well, you must stop it. Yes, Gurudev. Okay. So then he said, I'll stop it. I promise. He said, all right, you can go. So then he went. And some days later, he again approached the guru. And the guru said, so how are you maintaining yourself now? You're not begging, and keeping everything for yourself. He says, no. He says, I'm begging for you and I give this to you. But, and then some, I go out later and beg for myself separately. He said, no, you can't do that either. I didn't tell you, give you permission to do this. This is also bogus. Stop it immediately. Yes, Gurudev. Now go. So he left. So he went back to the Goshala. A few days later, he came again. And he was still quite healthy. And so the guru looked at him and said, Upamanyu, you still look quite chubby. And how are you maintaining yourself now? Are you going out and begging again? Or going out a separate time? He said, no, Gurudev, I'm not going to. So how are you maintaining yourself? He said, well, I'm in the Goshala, so I'm drinking the milk there. He said, no, you can't drink the milk. That is for Bhagavan. We're making ghee with that, and dahi, and you must stop this immediately. Who gave you permission? He said, no one. Yes, exactly. It's bogus, so stop this. He said, yes, Gurudev. And he went back to the dojo. A few days later, he came again. He was still quite fat. Still hasn't lost any weight, somehow. Guru said, so, Upamanyu, how are you maintaining yourself now? You're drinking milk, huh? Or begging, or he said, no, Gurudev, I'm not doing that. He said, well, how are you maintaining this? Then he said, well, when I milk the cows, there's some milk that spills on the ground, some froth there, so that I'm taking. He said, no, you shouldn't do that either. That's also wrong. Because then the calves, they see that you're drinking the remnants, what's left, and then they'll not take enough for themselves. So you can't take what's left. You're taking, this is not good for you also. He said, all right, I won't take anymore. So now go. So he sent him back again. So so then he didn't know what to do. So he was getting really hungry. So he started wandering in the forest and started eating some leaves. But he ate some arka leaves, which is like poisonous and it makes you go blind. So he became blind from eating these arka leaves. And he started wandering aimlessly and he fell into a ditch, into a big hole. Maybe, I think it was an empty well, an old dry well. He fell into this. So that evening, they didn't see him. He didn't come. So Ayodhya and his other disciples, they decided to come and find him. So they went into the forest and calling, Upamanyu, Upamanyu, where are you?
I'm here.
Upamanyu, where are you?
I'm here.
Where are you? Then they saw, oh, what are you doing down there? Oh, I fell in the hole. How did you fall? Well, I ate some leaves and I went blind and now I can't get out. You foolish boy. What should I do, Gurudev? He said, you have to chant some mantras from the Rig Veda and worship the Ashwini Kumaras. They'll help you. So then he started chanting his mantras. And the Ashwini Kumar, the twins, came before him. And he offered his obeisances. And then they offered him some sacrificial cake, which they received from some others who offered to them. This is the ritual cakes offered in the sacrifices, made from rice flour, I think, or something. So they offered him this cake. Said, you take this, then you'll be all right. And he said, oh no, Gurudev will be very angry. I can't just eat anything. I have to be strictly controlled. They said, don't worry, we offered this to him before and he ate it without offering it to his guru. He said, no, I have to offer it to my guru. He said, no, it's okay. He ate it. He didn't offer it to his guru. So you can... He said, no, I cannot do it. And I said, okay, good. Now you have understood. It was a test. So then his eyesight was regained. He came out of the hole and his guru embraced him and also blessed him with transcendental knowledge. And he also later became a spiritual master. So why does Vedavyasa write these stories in the beginning of the Mahabharata? He's trying to impress upon the reader that one cannot actually understand the import of the Vedas without the blessings of the spiritual master. Because it's not simply an academic process. We're studying the Gita systematically. It's almost academically, but there's something more. Because unless we're performing our guru seva and following our vows and respecting the Vaishnavas, then we won't understand the knowledge which is being given. We may pass the test, the Bhakti Shastri test, but we won't pass the ultimate test, which is to become Krishna conscious. So to get realization, one has to perform the activities, all the activities of devotional practice. And that begins with Adau Guru Padashraya, taking shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. By his mercy, one can understand the imports of the Vedas only. Yasya deve para bhaktir yatha deve tatha guru. So this faith in God and Guru have to be equal, and they support one another. Then it's not just knowledge, jnana, but it becomes vijnana, realization. The jnana is itself very valuable. One drop of knowledge is valuable. But one drop of realization is worth a liter of jnana, of knowledge. When you boil down a liter until it becomes one drop, right? That is realization. Realization is that much more potent and powerful. So that's really what we want, not just to acquire and possess knowledge. Because we can misuse the knowledge if we're not pure. And we can become proud of that knowledge. Just like the story of the one that I told about the parrot, right? He said that I was a Brahmin in my last life, but I was proud of my knowledge and I insulted the other Brahmins, and now I became a parrot. Right? Susharma was the name, right? Susharma met this parrot in the house of the prostitute. Right? And so the person was a knowledgeable Brahmin, but he became a parrot because he became proud of his knowledge. That if you become proud of your knowledge, that means you have no realization. Because realization, actual realization, means that you realize that you're insignificant and just a slave of Bhagavan. And that the Vaishnavas are their parts and parcels. And that's the knowledge which is in the next verse. Because here it says that, oh, okay, you bow down, offer seva, ask questions, and that Tattva Darshana, he will upadekshante, he will initiate you, he will, you know, give you knowledge. You will see the truth, right? So what truth? God is love, and everything is wonderful in the material world? No. The knowledge is given in the next verse. That all living beings are part and parcel of the Supreme, and that they are all in Him, and they belong to Him, and they are dear to Him. And He is inside of them also as the Paramatma. So therefore, the devotee becomes very respectful to all creatures. Not only the devotees, but he's actually respectful to everyone. Because the aparads you can make is nama aparad, seva aparad, Vaishnava aparad, and also jiva aparad. You can offend the living entities also. Of course, to offend a Vaishnava is 1,000 times more, is worse than some offending the non-Vaishnava. But still, there's some offense. So Prabhupada writes, not by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Right? So, some foolish questions which are not on the topic of Atmatattva is condemned. But also, blind following is also condemned. The guru's job is not just to get the disciples to, you know, kind of follow him and do everything without the knowledge, without the understanding. He has to actually train him how to think and to deliberate and to use his intelligence to understand the scriptures and how to apply the knowledge properly. I mean, you know, there's this traditional story of the guru going on a trip with his three disciples on the back of the bullock cart, right? And they're going along the road, and you know, they hit a bump, and some of the guru's belongings go flying in the air and out of the cart. But the guru's in the front, so he didn't see it. And the disciples were just, you know, watching. And they saw this. They didn't say anything. So then they kept driving. And later the guru turned around. He said, "Where's my bags? Where's my things?" And they said, "Well, they fell out about a mile back." And he said, "Well, why didn't you say anything?" "Well, you didn't tell us to, you know, you didn't instruct us to do such a thing." So, "Oh, you murkha. You know, why don't you use your intelligence? Look, if anything falls down from the cart, then pick it up and put it back. Just, that's a simple thing." I said, "Okay, Gurudev." So then they're driving down the road further. And then, of course, the bull passes stool at some point. So then they thought, if anything falls down, then we should pick it up and put it... Okay, so they jumped out and they picked up the cow dung from the bull and they put it on the cart. And as they were driving along, then the guru was... "What's that?" "No, turn around." "What's that?" "Murkha! What have you done? You put the dung in the cart? Stupid, what have you done? Why did you do this? Gurudev, you told us if something falls down, we should put on..." "Ah!" Whack! Slap him, you know? Yeah. So, you know, the blind following... The guru wants to get the disciple to actually use his intelligence according to the time, place, and circumstance, how to apply the Shastra, how to imply his instructions, how to imply all the injunctions. Prabhupada says, so one, not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Because actually, you know, there's so many injunctions and it's not always so clear how to apply them. And so someone may blindly follow a principle and misapply it in a particular circumstance. Like, you know the story of Koshikata in Mahabharata? I was telling you before, when when Yudhisthira was wounded by Karna and he was in the tent being cared for And Arjun heard that his brother Yudhisthira was wounded. He left the battlefield and came to him to see how he was. So at that time, Yudhisthira said, "Give up your Gandiva bow, rascal. What kind of kshatriya are you? You didn't kill Karna and you left the battlefield?" And then, you know, he took out his sword and he was ready to kill Yudhisthira. And Krishna looked at him and said, "What are you doing? You know, gone mad?" He said, "I made a vow." Someone even insinuates subtly to give up my Gandiva bow. And I should kill, I made a vow, I will kill him. And he told me directly. I said, "Are you crazy? He's the king. You're his younger brother. You should worship him like God. And he's wounded. He's unarmed. You're going to kill him. What about those injunctions?" So at that point, Krishna actually told him the story of Kaushikata, who was a rishi who made a vow, solemn vow, he will never tell a lie. He'll always tell the truth. And he was living in his little hut. Kaushikata. And, you know, there was a bunch of people, village people, who come running by his, you know, frantically in fear. They were running past his cottage, his ashram, and they ran into the forest, and they were like, there were women and some, you know, boys and some older, you know, older people, or just some village people, they were a whole group of them. And he was wondering, you know, why are they running in the forest? And then a moment later, this dacoit came running up, some gundas, you know, and they had knives out, and they looked real dirty and evil men, you know. They said, "Where are those villagers? Ah, you know, we're going to kill them. Tell us, where did they go? Have you seen them?" And, he was like, "What am I going to do? I made a vow, you know, to tell the truth." And so he just thought, "Yes, I saw them. Where did they go?" So they went that way. And then they went, they ran off with their knives. And those villagers were killed. So Kaushikata went to hell for telling the truth and following his vow. So Krishna told this to Arjuna. And then, you know, Arjuna's whole consciousness changed. And he said, "Yeah, right, okay, so now what do I do?" Then Krishna said, "Well, you can insult him. Insulting a kshatriya is worse than killing him, or equal to, so you can insult him." So Arjuna said, "You caused this whole war just because you're attached to gambling. You're not a real kshatriya. This and that. I could have killed the Pandavas during the dice game. The Kauravas during the dice game, and you didn't allow me to do it." And then he started crying. He fell down at Yudhisthira's feet and asked for forgiveness. So he killed Yudhisthira by insulting him. In that way, he was able to follow his vow and at the same time not kill him. So to understand how to apply dharma, the injunctions of the shastra and vows, according to time, place, and circumstance, it requires realization. Just knowing all of the injunctions is not good enough. You have to understand you have to get to feel what is dharma. It has to flow in your blood. It has to be in your veins, so you know what to do in any given circumstance. And that takes more than just studying. But you also have to study, but then you have to do the other things too. And the spiritual master's blessings are very important in understanding, getting a realization of the shastra. That's the most important thing. By your seva and paricharya, your usual seva, whatever it may be, puja, or preaching, or cooking. And then paricharya means a personal service to the guru, for his attending to his personal needs, washing his clothes, cleaning his room, bringing his prasad, and that. Okay. Anyway, we can talk about this verse for a long time. But we should continue now, because this is our study group. So, now what is the fruit of that knowledge? What is the result of getting that knowledge? What kind of knowledge is Krishna talking about that someone will get from approaching the Tattva-darshana? He said, upadekshyanti te jnanam. Now he will give you this knowledge. He will impart this knowledge unto you. Well, what knowledge? Yajgyatva na punor moham evam yasyasi pandava ina bhutanya sheshani rakshasyatman yato mai. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme. In other words, they are mine. So, understanding this knowledge of the soul and the supersoul, you will never fall again into illusion. What illusion? That you will kill your relatives, Arjuna. Why? Because you'll see them as spirit souls, different from the body. They're not the body. You'll see them as the effect and me as the cause. And as the effect is always in the cause, you will see them in me. That's the meaning. Because, I mean, they're not physically inside Krishna. But that's what it means. Krishna is the cause, the living entities are the visheshanas, and Bhagavan is the visheshya. The vishesha is the cause, and the visheshanas are the effect, or manifested from the original cause, or source. Right? Krishna istochnik. Krishna is the source, and we are his expansions. Mui expansi. No? So we have three Russian students in the back. We have to sometimes throw in a little Russian just to keep them awake. You know? So, Prabhupada writes, by Maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationships with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted toward this end, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being and identity apart from Krishna is called Maya. So that is the illusion which is dispelled by approaching the spiritual master. That we cannot be separated from Krishna. We're thinking they're separated now, but actually we're not. Krishna's in our heart, he's in every atom, he's there in the deity, he's in the Gita, in the Bhagavatam, he's in the prasadam. He's everywhere. But we don't see him somehow, even though he's everywhere. We're actually drowning in Krishna. But we don't even know it, and we think, where is Krishna? We think ourselves separate, independent of Krishna. But actually we're just floating in Krishna. So in text 35, it is said that a person doesn't become illusion. That was the first result. Now another result, in text 36, that person transcends or goes beyond sin. Another result of transcendental knowledge. Apichet asi papebhya sarvebhya papa krittamaha sarva jnana plave naiva vrijinam santa vishyasi. even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. Tarishyasi, Santarishyasi. Completely cross. Right? Tarishyasi means to cross. And some, Taranti. Right? Prapadyante tarantite. Mam prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Forget the order of the words. Sometimes Prabhupada said that often, he would always quote this verse. He would say, Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Right? He would always get it. Because that's kind of like the English anvaya. I give transcendental knowledge to them. But it's buddhi yogam dadami tam. Oh, right? It's flipped around. So, here, this word. Now, let's see. How can I say this? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura asks three questions in his commentary. He asks, if the person is so sinful, how can his heart be purified? Right? His heart or his mind, you could say. Maybe. And the second question, and without such purification, how can he develop knowledge? And without such purification, how can he get knowledge? And the third question, and if he's developed knowledge, then how can he act sinfully, so improperly? Right? So logically, he's kind of ask some very difficult questions that most of us couldn't answer. But then he answers them by quoting another authority, Madhusudan Saraswati. I'm not sure who this person is, but Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes him quite frequently. Not frequently, but occasionally quotes him. Madhusudan Saraswati. Some scholar, I think he must have been a Vaishnava. He's making commentary on the Gita. So, the word apichet means even if. In other words, the word apichet indicates the possibility of the impossible. In order to explain the glory of transcendental knowledge, here, Krishna is indicating the possibility of the impossible. In other words, someone who is situated in transcendental knowledge never acts sinfully. Hardly ever. It's impossible. But now he says, even if he were to act sinfully, still he would be able to get liberation. That's the point. And it's a way of glorification. So apichet means unlikely or apparently self-contradictory. The possibility of the impossible. It's very, very, very unlikely that this would happen. So the cure is transcendental knowledge, not fleeing from the battlefield. That's the meaning or the connotation. And Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. So if you're situated in transcendental knowledge, even if you kill all these people, then you don't have to worry. You'll still be able to cross over the ocean of this material life, or the ocean of misery. Okay. 37. Yathai dhangsi samidhogni bhasma satkurute arjuna yadagni sarva karmani bhasma satkurute tata. As a blazing fire turns wood to ashes, Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reaction to material activities. So for one whose heart has been purified by transcendental knowledge, in other words, when the knowledge is manifesting in a pure mind and completely destroys whatever karma has already been generated, it completely destroys whatever karma has been already generated. Shamarupa probably asked me yesterday about this question. And here's the answer, at least part of the answer. Here, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has commented, for one whose heart has been purified by transcendental knowledge, when the knowledge manifests in his pure mind, it completely destroys what prarabdha karma. If you had already studied Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you would know what that means. And I won't get into the whole thing, but let us just write on the board something. There's different types of stages of karma. This one, okay. Basically, you'll find like this. This is like, I used to give some example for this. I can't remember what I used to say. This is the, in the past, something which is unmanifest. And Kuta, Prabhupada calls it pre-seed. It's also unmanifest, but it's just kind of slightly activated. And this is a seed. And this means manifest. So, the karma that you have is the, you know, the fact that you're, you know, a Maharashtrian man, you know, maybe a male body, depending on what you say, and that you have certain qualities, you have a certain nose, certain characteristics that you were born with, right? So those things are manifested karma from your previous life. You acted and desired in certain ways, and now you have this body. Right? So that the knowledge from Nishkam karma doesn't affect this. It can't really touch this. But actually, pure devotion can, especially chanting the holy name, as Rupa Goswami has mentioned. So, okay. We'll see in the ninth chapter, we'll come to that. Prabhupada quotes from the Padma Purana, and there it is said that even the prarabdha karma can be purified or neutralized or affected by bhakti, by shuddha bhakti. So here, the fire of knowledge burns to ashes all reactions except for the prarabdha karma. the fourth one. So it's not a total Naishkarmya. When you're doing Nishkam Karma Yoga, you're freed from so many reactions, but the Prarabdha is there. Now you may say, okay, but how can the Prarabdha be changed? Well, your nature can be changed. Your proclivities, your propensities, your inclinations can be changed. And also, actually, the physical appearance of the person changes in bhakti. Yeah. Yeah. Prabhupada said that people used to come up to him and ask him, where are your disciples, which country are your disciples from? And he would say, they're Americans. And they said, no. They just couldn't believe. They said, but they look so bright-faced and so effulgent and so happy and relaxed and, you know, they look different. I said, no, they're Americans. They couldn't believe it. When I was in the New York temple, when I was a new bhakta, I remember there was this one man that was visiting there, and he used to come to the Brahmachari ashram. And he came to me, and he said, hey, tell me truthfully, what kind of soap do you guys use? You know? And I said, we don't use any special soap. He says, come on, Dave, just tell me, you know. I'm probably not supposed to tell anyone, but tell me, really, what kind of soap you must use some special soap. I said, no, we don't use. He says, but your faces are so bright and so, you know. That's what he thought. You know, I mean, people really see that there's a difference. Like, sometimes in the West, devotees, they get dressed up in, you know, pants and shirt, and they try to mix in with the karmis. And the karmis come up to me, and they say, you're Hare Krishna, right?
Yeah.
They can't get away with it, because they look different, they look more, I don't know. You know, we don't notice it because we're all with devotees, but they can see that there's some difference. You know? That's the Prarabdha karma changing. Okay, 38. Nahi jnanina sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tatsvayam yogasam siddha kale natmani vindati. In this world, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So the word kalena means in the course of time, and that is the important word in this verse. Because it means that Krishna is using it to encourage one to perform Nishkam Karma Yoga. And that it's a warning of premature renunciation. In other words, don't try to jump up to the sannyas platform too quickly, because it takes some time to get purified. So it's a warning of premature renunciation. And it indicates that transcendental knowledge is gradually revealed in the heart of one practicing Nishkam Karma Yoga. It indicates that transcendental knowledge is gradually revealed in the heart of the Nishkam Karma Yogi. Kalena. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says that not all can attain transcendental knowledge. It's not so easy. But by performing Nishkam Karma for a long time, one will achieve it. And transcendental knowledge reveals itself within one's atma. You could say one's heart or in one's mind. in the Atman. Transcendental knowledge reveals itself within one's mind or heart. So it doesn't come when someone abruptly takes sannyas. Abruptly means too soon. It's an important point. So in other words, we should just fix our minds on being good devotees, not great devotees. Because if you want to be great, it indicates that you want others to think that you're great. Isn't it? That's the general meaning. If you just try to be a good devotee, it means that you're not looking for any distinction. Right? You just try to be a good devotee, and if Krishna makes you into a great devotee, that's his business. Okay? We shouldn't desire to be great or known as great. If we just try to be good, then that's good enough. That's just the English way of saying it, you know. Because to be great has a connotation, you know. Because being great is not just being very good. To be great means that you're thinking you want other people to see you as a big devotee. Like that. So everything takes its own time. So we shouldn't try to jump ahead and to promote ourselves. Let Krishna promote you when he wants to. If he wants to. In other words, we should just be satisfied with whatever position and service we have. And Krishna does promote us when we're ready. And usually what happens is you may be hankering for some kind of service or position. And then you, after some time, you give up that desire. And you realize that it's material. And then Krishna gives you that position. That's what happens, usually. Or, how can you say? You get to the point where you don't care about it anymore, for one reason or another, and then Krishna gives it to you. That's usually what happens, and probably 99% of the time. So when you're hankering for something, depending on your relationship with Krishna, if he's actually very merciful to you, then he doesn't give it to you. You know. Sometimes devotees are on a low level, and so Krishna sees that if they have a desire, then if he gives them that thing, they'll develop faith in him. So then he gives it, because then it will help them to come to him. But then when he sees a devotee that he has some desire, and if he gives it, it won't help the person come to him, then the person will become overly attached to that thing, then he doesn't do that. Whatever facilitates the devotee coming to him, that is what Krishna gives. Okay, text 39. So how and when does one get this transcendental knowledge? Another hint, this is Krishna's giving the adhikar. Now. So he's telling what the results are, and now he's telling how one gets it, or what kind of person is qualified to get it.
Shraddha vallabhate jnanam tatpara samyatindriyah jnanam labhva param shantim acharanadigacchati.
A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge, and having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. It's funny. He says in the last verse that it takes some time. And in this verse he says it very quick. Yeah. Acharena. So it means that once you get the knowledge, which takes a long time, then you're there. Very quickly you attain spiritual peace. So Shadaval means, or Shadavan, means when the mind is pure by Nishkam Karma Yoga, and when proper intelligence comes, bringing inclination towards the injunctions of the Shastras. Because Shraddha actually means faith in the Shastra, and faith in those who follow the Shastra and who know the Shastra, like the Guru. So, but the basis of the faith of Shraddha means faith in the Shastra. Because the Guru is, his knowledge is also coming from the Shastra. Of course, he has realization also, that how to apply the Shastra. But everything is there based in, founded in the Shastra. So faith actually means faith in Shastra, Guru Sadha Shastra. And Tatpara means when one does Nishkam Karma Yoga with staunch faith, or Nishta, and he gains sense control and peace. What knowledge? Yes. 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 And because it means knowledge that you're not the body, you're a spirit soul. And then for us it also means understanding that we're part and parcel of Krishna, his servants. So now, after explaining the Adhikar, now Krishna explains who's unfit for transcendental knowledge.
Agyascha shadadhanascha sangshayatma vinashyati nayam lokostina paro nasukam sangshayatmanaha.
But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. So actual happiness comes when one acts according to the Shastra with knowledge and discrimination. So doubters have no proper knowledge and discrimination, so therefore they have no happiness. So if we perform work with faith and control of the senses according to the Shastra, then happiness will come and peace and all the benefits of transcendental knowledge. But here, actually Krishna is speaking about three separate kinds of people who don't have faith. The first one is agya, the foolish person who's like an animal. A murka. Then the ashadadhana means that they have shastric knowledge, but having seen so much disagreement and contradictions between different schools of thought, therefore they don't trust anybody. It's kind of like the bhaya person in the 411, Vita Radha Bhaya. There's so many different conflicting kinds of philosophy. That they lose faith. Then the last one is sangshayatma. That means they have some faith, but they think that, I don't know if it will, this process will be effective in my case.
So the rest of the verse is referring specifically to the last one. Nayam lokosti na paro na sukam sangshayatma, because sangshayatma. Right? That in this world and in the next world, na paro, na sukam, he won't get happiness. The foolish person can be enlightened, and the other person may be somehow convinced, you know, of one particular siddhanta. Because that second person, the ashradhana, he has some knowledge of the shastra, but he doesn't have faith in any one siddhanta. So if someone can come along and convince him, then he can also develop faith. So he has some chance. But the person who has some faith, but still he thinks that, well, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if this process is going to be beneficial in my case. So he doesn't really have a good reason to not do it. So therefore, that person's considered, in one sense, even worse. Even though he has some faith. It's a strange way to go. But that's what Krishna's talking about here. Of course, you can't just read that from the verse or just from the basic translation. See, Prabhupada, he tried to keep the translations and the knowledge very simple and just give the main points. Because this book already is too big, you know what I mean? When you give this book to somebody, they go, oh, come on, look at that. You expect me to read this thing? You know, it's 1,000 pages. You know? And especially it's for Western people. So, you know, they say, oh, agya means this, ashradhana means that, sangshayat means this. Oh, come on, you know, it's just too much. But for us, we've already studied the Gita, and we know the basic philosophy, and we have some faith in the process already, and you know, like this. So we can go a little deeper and understand some of these points. And actually, a lot of the time, Prabhupada kind of hints about these things in the commentaries. I'll show you sometimes where that is. I haven't actually checked this one out, but I don't think he makes a distinction here between the three different kinds. Let us read, maybe we can find some. Out of many standard and authoritative revealed scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita is the best. Persons who are almost like animals, that's the first one, right? Have no faith in or knowledge of the standard revealed scriptures, and some, others, right? Maybe this is the second one, even though they have knowledge of or can cite passages from the revealed scriptures, have actually no faith in these words. And even though others, okay, so that seems to be the second one. Right? I mean, it's close. The first one is the animal, agya. Then the second one, he has some knowledge of the shastra, but no faith or siddhanta. Okay. And then let's see if the third one comes. And even though others, maybe the third kind, may have faith in the scriptures like the Gita, they do not believe in or worship the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness. They fall down. Out of all the above mentioned persons, right? So he's talking about more than one. Those who have no faith and are always doubtful make no progress at all. It seems that that's the third kind. Men without faith in God and His revealed word find no good in this world nor in the next. For them, there is no happiness whatsoever. One should therefore follow the principles of revealed scriptures with faith and thereby be raised to the platform of knowledge. Only this knowledge will help one become promoted to the transcendental platform of spiritual understanding. In other words, doubtful persons have no status whatsoever in spiritual emancipation. One should therefore follow the footsteps of great acharyas who are in the succession, attain success. Okay, so he does actually refer to them. So you'll see that that happens a lot. It seems, you know, it's like he presented in a simple way. But it has all of the information there. Just that he doesn't, you know, it's like he's not making an academic presentation. Just getting the point to the person. Okay. So now, how to destroy those doubts? Text 41. Because doubts are the things that really stop one on the path to self-realization. So how to destroy that? The word sankshayam is here in the verse. Yoga sanyasta karmanam jnana sanchinna sanshayam atmavantam na karmani nibhadnanti dhananjaya. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his action, that means nishkam karma yoga, and whose doubts have been destroyed. How? By transcendental knowledge, jnana. He's situated factually in the cell. Thus, he is not bound by the reactions of work. O Dhananjaya. O Dhananjaya. Remember Dhananjaya? Why is Arjuna called Dhananjaya? A lot of wealth, yes. He brought for the Rajasuya Yagya he went to the north. And he brought it to Hastinapur, to Indraprastha. So why is Krishna calling him Dhananjaya? No one has commented on this, but I have a sneaking suspicion that Krishna is trying to encourage Arjuna to be a nishkam karma yogi, detached from the fruits of his work. In other words, he's saying, come on, Arjuna. You're saying that you're confused about working and not working, and that you don't understand how to work as a sacrifice, but you already did this for your brother Yudhisthira. You went off and fought and defeated all of those kings, and then you brought the fruit and you gave it to Yudhisthira. Because you're Dhananjaya, you won the wealth, and then you didn't keep it for yourself, you gave it for the sacrifice, for the Rajasuya sacrifice. So just do the same thing now. It's not any different. You're fighting as a sacrifice. Right? This is how I understand this. Why is he telling him that he's Dhananjaya? He's telling him to renounce the fruits of the action in this verse. That's how he gets free from doubt. Yoga sanyasta karmana. Right? One who renounces the karmana, the fruits of his action. Then he gets jnana, and then with that jnana, the sanshaya is chinna, it's cut, destroyed. Sanchina, completely cut. So nishkam karma leads to knowledge, and with knowledge you get free from doubt. And then you progress. So Dhananjaya, just give up the attachment to the fruits of your work and just fight. You already did this. It's not a new thing for you. It's easy. Just do what you did for your brother, now do it for me. So we can also make our own commentaries. It's according to the Shastra, right? It makes perfect sense. It's in the Siddhanta. And in this verse, it's talking about renouncing the fruit. And then it calls him Dhananjaya. Nobody has made a comment. Right? We can also use your intelligence to see what is being said. That's what it means. to actually have realization from the mercy of the spiritual master. We're not just blindly following everything, but we use our intelligence. There's a difference between mental speculation and philosophical speculation. Mental speculation means you're just, you know, playing a game in your mind, and it has no basis in any truth or any basis in Shastra. But philosophical speculation means you try to understand the scriptures, how the scripture is true, and what is being said. So that's good. So karma and gyan are like paddy. You know what is paddy? It means rice when it's ripe. So paddy has two parts, the outer covering and then the rice inside. So karma is like the outside covering and gyana is inside. And it's the valuable part. And it's the part that you don't see. It's inside of the paddy. So thus, jnana is actually superior to karma. Because jnana means realization, the result of karma. So they're not really different. They're just a transformation. And we'll get to that in the next chapter. I didn't make a note, but I believe that that's Baladeva Vidyabhushan's analogy. All right. Next, last verse, 42. Krishna, what does he say? He concludes, right? Tasmat. Tasmat. He uses this a lot. So now he's telling him what he told him. Right? Tasmat agyanam sambhutam ritstam jnana sinat manaha chitvainam sanshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata. Therefore the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Arm with yoga, O Bharat, stand and fight. So here yoga means nishkam karma yoga. Not jnana yoga, not ashtanga yoga, and not bhakti yoga yet. That's coming. No? So of all the processes recommended for attaining liberation, jnana is glorified here. And nishkam karma is the only way to get jnana. So this is the essence of this chapter. All right. Prabhupada summarizes the whole chapter in his commentary. And you'll see all of the sections in his commentary. We'll see. The yoga system instructed in this chapter is called Sanatan Yoga, or eternal activities performed by the living entity. This yoga has two divisions of sacrificial actions. One is called sacrifice of one's material possessions. Remember what that was called? Dravya Mayat. Yagya, right?
Karma
yagya. It's Dravya Maya Yagya. Right? And the other is called knowledge of the self, which is Jnana Yagya, which is pure spiritual activity. If sacrifice of one's material possessions is not dovetailed for spiritual realization, then such sacrifice becomes material. But one who performs such sacrifices with a spiritual objective or in devotional service makes a perfect sacrifice. So when these dravya yagyas or dravya mayad, or sometimes it's called jad dravya also, jada, like jada bharat, it means dull or material. So when that jada dravya yagya is performed with the objective of self-realization, then it has good benefit and it brings knowledge. So it's not so much the particular sacrifice, it's the person's mentality, what he's thinking about, what is his objective when he's performing the sacrifice. Prabhupada continues, When we come to spiritual activities, we find that these also are divided into two, namely understanding oneself and the truth regarding the Lord, Bhagavan. One who follows the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is can very easily understand these two important divisions of spiritual knowledge. For him, there is no difficulty in obtaining perfect knowledge of the self as part and parcel of the Lord. And such understanding is beneficial, for such a person can easily understand transcendental activities of the Lord. Right? As given in the first 10 verses. So now he talks about that. In the beginning of this chapter, the transcendental activities of the Lord were discussed by the Supreme Lord Himself. One who does not understand the instructions of the Gita is faithless and is to be considered to be misusing the fragmental independence awarded to him by the Lord. In spite of such instructions, one who does not understand the real nature of the Lord as the eternal, blissful, all-knowing personality of God is certainly fool number one. So that's from 1 to 10. Ignorance can be removed by gradual acceptance of the principles of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is awakened by different types of sacrifices to the demigods, sacrifice to Brahman, sacrifice in celibacy, household life, controlling the senses, mystic yoga, penance, right, tapas, foregoing material possessions, dravya yoga, svadhyaya yoga, studying the Vedas, and partaking in the social institution called varnashram. All of these are known as sacrifice, yajna, and all of them are based on regulated action. But within all these activities, the important factor is self-realization. One who sees that objective is the real student of Bhagavad Gita. But one who doubts the authority of Krishna falls back. So there's the section 25 to 33, right? And the conclusion of that section, which was already mentioned on the top of that, towards the beginning of the commentary. So he again says the same thing. When you have a spiritual objective, then that you're the real student of the Bhagavad Gita. One is therefore, now the last section, one is therefore advised to study Bhagavad Gita or any scripture under bona fide spiritual master, Tadviti Pranipatena, with service and surrender. A bona fide spiritual master is in the parampara from time eternal. It does not deviate from the instructions of the Lord as they were imparted millions of years ago to the sun god, from whom the instructions of the Gita have come down to the earthly kingdom. One should therefore follow the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is expressed in the Gita itself, and beware of self-interested people after personal aggrandizement who deviate others from the path. The Lord is definitely the Supreme Person, and don't doubt it. And His activities are transcendental. One who understands this is a liberated person from the very beginning of his study of the Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada ki. So, these various yajnas mentioned all constitute karma. But the only useful factor is atma-tattva, or the science of self-realization. And if one doubts atma-tattva, or Krishna himself, then this is the greatest obstruction to spiritual realization. And this is the greatest enemy of transcendental knowledge. A person with faith who takes help from the tattvavid can dispel all his doubts and realize the self. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. As long as one has affinity for the material world, as long as one is attached to the material world, one should take shelter of Nishkam Karma Yoga and in order to get the stage of self-realization, atma-tattva. That's it, what he says. So in this commentary, Prabhupada actually followed fairly closely to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, actually. Very similar. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote this Sanatan Yoga. And Prabhupada hasn't mentioned that term yet. And he said there's these two divisions. Right, this Yada Dravya And then the other one is Jnana Yoga. And in the Jnana Yoga, or the transcendental, I think he calls it Atma Yatatma, something like this. Then there's two divisions again. That's one Sarup, understanding your Sarup, and understanding Bhagavan. Atma Tattva and Bhagavan Tattva. So that's the end of chapter 4. Now we're going to just immediately dive into chapter 5 and keep going. Without any hesitation whatsoever. Of course, what you should do, just to kind of enliven your soul, stand up, please, everyone, stand up. And put your hands in the air as high as they can go. And chant, Hare Krishna! Okay, sit down. That's good. We have to keep the body and soul enlivened, you know.